You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Raja Rajamannar.
If you look at designing a brand logo in a visual form, there's enough amount of material. So we are actually at the beginning of the journey on the sonic branding collectively as an industry, as a marketing industry or a fraternity, that you have no choice but to create your own playbook.
Raja is Chief Marketing and Communication Officer for MasterCard and President of the company's healthcare business. He also serves as President of the World Federation of Advertisers. With more than 30 years' experience as a global executive, Raja has held C-level roles at firms ranging from Anthem to Humana and has overseen the successful evolution of MasterCard's identity for the digital age, from its priceless experiential platforms to marketing-led business models. His work has been featured by Harvard Business School and Yale School of Management case studies and taught at more than 40 top management schools around the world. Raja earned an MBA from the Indian Institute of Management and a Bachelor of Technology degree from Omania University. He's also author of the new book, Quantum Marketing, Mastering the New Marketing Mindset for Tomorrow's Consumers. Raja, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you so much, Nick. Really appreciate having me on your show and looking forward to our conversation very much.
Well, I am excited for our conversation because I feel like it is a fork in the road with your experience. There's two different interesting vantage points that you've had over this past year. One, you lead a global brand like MasterCard on the marketing front, and certainly this has seen a big shift for marketers and brand builders. But on top of all of that, as if that wasn't hard enough, you also had a book that you're working on coming out within this crazy period of marketing flux. First, on the MasterCard front, what has this past year meant for a brand of your size and scope?
Right. I think, it's probably, overly obvious to say that this has probably been the most disruptive year for every single company, including for MasterCard, right? And if you look at the business model of MasterCard, we earn our revenues as consumers spend their money in different sectors. And while some sectors have gone through the roof, like e-commerce or streaming services, on the other hand, industries like airlines have actually frozen up, car rental companies and hotel industry. So it was a very interesting challenge from a revenues perspective for the company. And when revenues are under pressure, the first thing which happens is that marketing dollars are actually constrained. So we had our quota of reduction in our marketing dollars to be able to spend. So we had to really think outside of the box and figure out how we can stretch every single dollar that we have very optimally and in a way that's giving us measurable and compelling results. So this is one. But more than just deployment of money and getting ROI on it, we had to fundamentally revisit some of our business models, which was fascinating to me. Like, for example, if you look at our entire marketing value proposition, it's based on experiences. So we pivoted from traditional advertising to experiential marketing in a big way starting 2013. And in this, what we do is to curate and create experiences which are truly priceless that money cannot buy, but you can get them only if you have a MasterCard. And these experiences are in a physical space. They happen in concerts, they happen in stadiums, or they're happening in some exotic locations around the world. So when travel freeze happens and everyone is sitting at home, this entire platform suddenly becomes frozen too. So, and we cannot afford to not be engaging our consumers. So what we had to do was to very quickly pivot to digital. Everything had to be digital. So we started curating digital experiences where in the past, if you had a backstage meet and greet with one of the singers, now we were enabling the singer to come onto your screen at your home and for you to be able to interact and record the whole transaction, a whole interaction for you. And then we send it to you as a memento. So we started really pivoting into those digital experiences. And likewise, digital commerce has taken off. Literally what would have been a normal growth rate over 7 to 8 years, it happened in just 1 year in terms of the number of people who have been using e-commerce and number of categories for which they were deploying e-commerce. So it's been one of the most fascinating pivots, I would say, where we had to really rethink and very quickly adjust our strategies and tactics and still be present and continue to win in the marketplace.
Well, I love that note on your shift, which you talked about had happened as early as 2013 back to the experiential. And experiential is its own difficult beast to get your arms around because it can be anything. It can be, as you noted, in-person experiences or digital. But all of a sudden, if you've got this sprawling thing that is experience and then it can only be digital. I feel like we've had to dig even deeper to figure out how we can create meaningful experiences in a digital-only ecosystem. And it seems like it's required even more creativity than we'd already put towards this and new tech tools, things like AI to look at how we can create something that's even more meaningful to our consumers at one of the hardest times to do that.
Exactly. In fact, technology has played a major role, and like I said, it's, for example, just imagine 2 years back, 18 months back, we would not be having this kind of a video conference-based interviewing or a audio conference-based interviewing, right? And all the meetings in offices are happening remotely. Remote learning is happening, where kids, including my kid, I know they're doing it from home. And the entire routine and the lifestyles of people change completely. So their needs, their aspirations, they're very different today than what they were pre-COVID. And technology has been one of the biggest enablers for that. And even in a B2B environment, for example, we ourselves have held so many virtual summits. Normally, those conferences would be physical and you can only do so many in a year. But whereas we had something like 4 to 5 times the number of conferences we held and we hosted compared to what we used to do during COVID. So it's been highly productive thanks to technology.
Well, and you talk about that technology too, and I think that's such an interesting shift because in your work, you talk a lot about the five senses. How can we use some of that technology to engage some of those senses that might have been easier to access in the physical world, but now that we're all homebound, how can we find more enriching experiences for our customers? Because like you said, everybody's been to so many live events, or not live, virtual events over the past year. We're looking for just new ways to do something different. And I think we have to lean on some of this newer technology, right?
Absolutely. Now, in fact, one example which comes to my mind right away is the smart speakers at our homes. Now, today, more than 40% of all the households in the United States or UK or Germany or Japan already have a smart speaker in their homes. And this smart speaker has now become some kind of it's literally like a digital assistant for you, setting from alarms or controlling temperature to playing music to making purchases. Now, making purchases is what I would focus on for a minute. So if you see how the interaction goes, say I want to buy diapers. So I say, hey, Alexa, or it could be, hey, Google, say, you know, I need to buy diapers. And then it will say, okay, do you want to buy Pampers? I would say, yeah. And that's it. It says, okay, fine, your account will be debited, the card on file with Amazon, and we have placed an order for your diapers. Now, the problem with this is many brands get excluded from consideration. So if you are not already at the top of the list of Alexa, because that's what you know the algorithm brings up, you need to figure out how do you get into the top one, two, three, because consumers in an audio environment don't want to hear or keep on hearing various options. They're very impatient. So the first suggestion from Alexa, 70% of the people actually go ahead and say, yes, go ahead with it. Only 30% will say, okay, tell me more or give me options. Now, that is pretty transforming for marketers. But this is a new technology called smart speakers, which we have to get our hands around, understand what is this new gatekeeper or influencer that is coming into the purchase funnel. Now, this virtual entity called Alexa or Google, and they're going to change marketers' lives. And we need to figure out solutions of how to be there and how to show up. And one of the things that, you know, to register as a brand. So if you're doing your search as a consumer on a computer screen, you can see the brand. There is a visual. There is content beyond just the brand visual. And we scan it and immediately we are processing the information. In audio, there is no visual real estate. So how do you show your brand? So you need to rethink your branding strategy. And at MasterCard, for example, we have created our sonic branding, which is the first of its kind across any company in the world or across any industry for that matter. And this is proving to be hugely successful for us, where you are showing your brand in an audio format, and that is not a jingle. So it's a very comprehensive architecture. So we need to sort of understand how to show up when the consumers are looking around, how to motivate them to move towards your brand, and then how to give them reassurance after they have purchased. And this entire thing is now, if it has to be done in an audio medium or audio-only medium, we have to get into sonic branding in a big way, which we did as a company. But those are the kind of disruptions, you know. So it is smart speakers have started, and you have to therefore be in sonic branding as just one implication.
You know, that's such an important conversation, because I think when we talk about tools like smart speakers, we over-index on what's easy to see. It's easy to see the device sitting on everyone's desk in everyone's home, and we want people to talk to that about our brand, but they're getting inrunded exactly as you noted there. And I love the idea of thinking of these smart speakers, and I have to be careful how I talk about it. There's one in the room with me now, and I'm afraid that if I call it by name, it will ask me if I want to order more dog food or coffee. But I love the bigger conversation about sonic branding too. And I think I like that you introduced that too, because you were quick to say not a jingle, because I feel like whenever we talk about anything that is auditory in nature, we're quick to, okay, it's a jingle, or maybe the best we can do is the little the Intel inside boop 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 boop. But it's so much more than that. It is its own topic, and as we're faced with new gatekeepers, if someone's listening to that and thinking, I've never thought about it like this, where do you tell them to start with sonic branding?
See, firstly, there is not a whole bunch of material available in the public domain for this. And, you know, if you look at designing a brand logo in a visual form, there's enough amount of material. So we are actually at the beginning of the journey on the sonic branding collectively as an industry, as a marketing industry or a fraternity, that you have no choice but to create your own playbook. Now, what you should realize is that it is a science. It is not just common sense. You need to be able to understand what is the impact that sound has got on people's emotions. What kind of notes will evoke what kind of feelings? What kind of rhythm will make them think and do stuff? So it's a science that they need to really invest in to understand very quickly. And there's a lot of scientific material available on the impact of sound on human emotions and the feelings. And then second thing is to say, how do you want to show up in an audio environment, and what values and what characteristics and what personality do you want to present your brand with in that environment, which, by the way, cannot be and should not be inconsistent with the very same things in the visual world. So you cannot be in the sonic world looking like something and in a different video world, you are completely different. You cannot have that kind of a dichotomy. You need to have consistency across the board. And third, you need to have the courage of conviction to say, yeah, I'm coming up with something that seems to be really good. I understand why it is really good, and I'm going to be sticking with it, because consistency is the key. Like, marketers are very quick to change things because, you know, they always want to try and do new things. So campaigns keep running every time, a new campaign. But what they should realize is they don't change the logo every day or every month. If a logo is there, it's there for a very long time, for decades probably. In the same way, they should realize that the sonic branding also should be invested in for consistency over a very long period of time. And they should also recognize that, just like in a visual, you want to appeal to all the audiences across all geographies, across all age groups, and so on. Same thing they should try out in audio as well. So they need to use the principles of visual branding, but understand how that translates to the audio medium, and then go about embarking on it, because otherwise it can be a futile exercise and it can be fairly expensive too.
Do you struggle to keep up with everything that's new with marketing today? Don't get frustrated. Get scrappy. I'd love to bring my Get Scrappy keynote to your next conference or corporate event. With a foot in the classroom and a foot in the field working with clients, I know what works and why, and I can't wait to share it with you during a talk that mixes strategic insights with tactical, practical tips. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics, at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard.com/speaking. Now back to the show.
So I'm glad you talked about, in introducing that what was, I think, a great quick start sonic playbook. Like you said, there's not one out there. So I think that's a great start, as opposed to, as you mentioned, visual. And you talked about marketers easy to change things, or are quick to change things often. And one change I wanted to ask you about, because I feel like there's a lot of folks listening that look at an iconic brand like MasterCard and see, they've taken the words out of the visual identity, and they want to be able to do that. Talk a bit about the process, because I think that's whenever I'm working with clients or talking with someone, I always say, well, slow down. Let's really, really think about this. But I'd love to get inside that decision, because I think you have an iconic brand with a history there, and that's a big move.
Yeah, it was a huge move, and it was an interesting kind of a discussion. You know, imagine me walking into the CEO's room or CEO's office and say, hey, I got a great idea this morning. I think we should drop our name from our logo. That's not going to go very well, right? So the way that I had gone about was very, very thoughtfully and very analytically and with a lot of research and testing. So firstly, why did we have to drop the name? Now, if you look at the digital environment, whether it is, you know, whichever be the screens are getting smaller on the one hand, And the space available for our brands to show up is getting smaller and smaller. So, for example, if you are going to the checkout page using your mobile phone, you have got 4 or 5 brands out there, payment brands, which are showing for you to choose from, right? And firstly, we need to stand out. Now, one good thing we have got is we are red and yellow. But if you look at all of our competitors, whether it is Visa or Amex and somebody even like a PayPal, they're all blue, blue, blue. So we stand out to some extent because of our colors, which is a good start. But the space is so small that people can barely read the words, read the word MasterCard. They make out it is a MasterCard because of the 2 circles in red and yellow. So we said, if people anyway don't want it or don't read it, by taking away, are they going to miss out anything? So that was the first test we had to do. So we dropped the name. Well, now, why do I drop the name to begin with? I dropped the name because the space occupied by the word MasterCard can now be occupied by an expanded size of the 2 circles. So the 2 circles, they get an expansion size of the size or area by about almost 6%. However, it looks visually disproportionately bigger than the other brands. So it really pops. And that was a business reason. We said, this is great. And am I losing anything by not having the MasterCard name and just only have the circles? The good news is 84% of the people around the world recognize MasterCard by looking at the logo, even without the name. Now, very few brands can accomplish that kind of objective. So therefore, that gave me the confidence to say, if I'm letting go of my name, of the name of the brand, and just show the symbol brand, which is the 2 circles in red and yellow color, it should work very well. Plus, it'll make my presence in the digital media far more prominent than before. And so with that, we went ahead, and the response has been fantastic. So I'm very delighted we bit the bullet and that we had done it.
Well, I love everything that you said went into that, because I think it does come full circle back to our earlier conversation nicely, because I think too many, because you jumped right in and said, we did a lot of research and a lot of testing. And I'm afraid folks out there listening might realize that, I haven't done any of that. And to be able to understand the impact and that 84%, that's an amazing number, and absolutely with what you can do there. Raja, talk a bit about your book, Quantum Marketing, what it's about, and really the odd challenge of releasing a book right now.
So the book has been a passion project of mine, right? So during COVID, my travel got completely halted, like everyone else's. So I had more time, and I said, okay, let me put that time to good use. And it has been a dream for me to write a book. So I said, let me start penning my thoughts. And I started putting my thoughts together, and I could finish the first draft of the book in 3 weeks' time. So I feel really good about it. And then I started refining it and getting data and editing it and so on and so forth. And finally, I managed to complete the book almost an year and 3 months ahead of the schedule that I originally had in mind. So that was fantastic. The book basically, and also, by the way, it was not a quickly and a shoddily written book by any stretch. It has made it to the Wall Street Journal bestsellers list, which I feel very grateful about. And also, it has been given a Stevie Award for the best business books in the bronze category. So I'll take that. So those are the good things. And I'm getting extraordinarily positive feedback from my peers, from industry experts, and from academic professors and so on. So this has been really good. And so the book is essentially about how marketing has to be reinvented completely for the immediate future. Now, every time there are a couple of technologies that come along our way, marketing gets disrupted. What do I mean? So, for example, when radio and television had come about as technologies way, way back, marketers suddenly had an extraordinary ability to tell stories in a more compelling way. And that actually gave birth to, I would say, the entire field of emotional marketing. and which I call the second paradigm of marketing. When internet and data analytics came into marketing in the mid-1990s, marketing again had to reinvent itself, and we had digital marketing, we had data-driven marketing, internet marketing, right? And when 2007, Apple for iPhone has launched, and we had the scaling of Facebook as a massive social media platform that year, between the social media platform and between the mobile-connected smartphones, again, our life has totally changed. And that was the birth of mobile marketing, social media marketing, influencer marketing, and so on. Now, we are at the verge of being bombarded by 24 disruptive technologies. Just imagine, 2 technologies in the past had brought about significant changes. Now we are getting 24 technologies coming our way. When that happens, marketing is going to be totally different. And in fact, even today, marketing the way it is cracking. It's failing. There are too many cracks right now. Marketing is not working the way it is supposed to be working. A lot of theories are being put upside down, and a lot of fundamental principles we thought were principles are unchangeable. They're actually completely being eroded. And with the advent of these new technologies, marketing gets into the fifth paradigm, as I call it, and we will not succeed with existing ways of doing marketing, existing theories of marketing. So we need to reinvent. So this new approach to marketing is what I call quantum marketing. If I can just take one quick example in the world of physics. In physics, we try to understand the world around us and how things work through various laws of classical physics. Like you have got Newton's laws of motion, laws of gravity, laws of electricity and magnetism and so on. When you understand how things work through these various theories, you can then tap into them, you can leverage them, and that's how buildings are built, motor cars are built, and so on and so forth. Now, when humanity discovered outer space, classical physics was hopeless. It just could not do anything. It could not explain anything there. Again, likewise, on the other extreme, when you looked inside of atoms and molecules, classical physics just couldn't deal with it. It didn't know how to approach that reality. And so there were so many situations. And so a new field of physics was born called quantum physics, which actually put all the classical theories of physics on their head. And now, what we do a lot today, whether it is satellites or it is rockets or it is nuclear bombs or everything, these are based on quantum physics and the principles of quantum physics. So to me, that was a striking analogy. Classical marketing is not going to work anymore. What we need is quantum marketing. So what is classical, what is quantum physics to physics? Quantum marketing is to marketing. So that's how I'm approaching the whole thing. And one example, if I can just give in 30 seconds, is loyalty. We as an industry spend hundreds of billions of dollars behind loyalty programs. Whereas when I read an article on BBC.com, I fell off my chair when I saw that that article said that there was a survey that was done amongst people in relationships, say the marriage or live-in relationships. 70% plus have admitted to have cheated on their partners. Now, I started thinking about it and said, my God, in these kind of surveys, probably the stats are understated. So it could probably be a lot more. So I started doing a lot of research into that space and practically read every single report that is out there in the space, which, by the way, is not a whole bunch, but there is enough to come to some interesting conclusions. So I said, if people in a relationship are in that relationship because they have made a commitment and they're also aware that there are consequences to being caught not being loyal, reputational damage, financial damage, emotional damage to a lot of people. In spite of it, people are not loyal. Now, as brands, we come in and say, oh, we are having our customers who are loyal to us. We are kidding ourselves. Right? So I said, we need a different kind of an approach. And I call it preference management, which means every time the consumer is going to make a purchase, you need to influence that consumer's choice, which means you need to be present out there. you need to put relevant information in front of them that is compelling enough that they buy my product as opposed to some other product or some other brand. So that's how we should approach. And we don't have the infrastructure in most of the companies to do something like this. And at the same time, you also have to be deeply respectful of consumers' privacy and not intrude. Now, these two look like oxymoron. Complete leverage of data and total privacy for consumers, right? But there are ways that we can actually do it very effectively. So I talk about it on these kind of things in my book, you know, the blockchains and artificial intelligence and every single new technology that is coming out, I try to demystify them so that a normal human being can easily understand without getting caught up in jargon. And also, I try to, in a very conversational tone, I explain what the implications are to marketers and then what marketers should do about it. So this is almost like a high-level playbook for marketers as to how they should go about doing their quantum marketing for the impending fifth paradigm.
Well, that is great. Couldn't agree more. And especially the idea that you look at all the shifts, we have more to do. We need help. Demystifying it. Speaking of things we need help with, it is now time for me to ask your help by learning a brand that has made you smile recently, Raja.
Right. In fact, one of the brand which probably I really smiled at what they have done in a good way was Burger King. They have leveraged technology, which is geofencing or location-based marketing, and they created a campaign where they said, if you are in the vicinity of a McDonald's, immediately a message pops up onto your screen, says that just now, if you go straight from here to a Burger King, you will get their Whopper for something like 1 cent or something. I don't remember the exact price, but very, very almost throwaway kind of a price. And it was so funny to see the video of how people would actually walk there in the drive-through of McDonald's. And they're coming and then they see this. And then they ask the McDonald's person, where is the nearest Burger King? Because they want to go there because they are running a promotion. And it was, I thought, a very, very clever and a funny kind of an ad. I would hate to be in McDonald's shoes on that particular campaign. But I thought what Burger King did was very funny and brought a smile to my face.
Well, that is a great example. And Burger King is certainly a great brand on the smile front. Raja, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do, your book, everything else?
Got it. So I think first and foremost, they can go to my website, which is called quantummarketing.com. Quantum marketing is one word. So quantummarketing.com. If they go there, they'll find more about me as well as the book and the people who have endorsed my book. And they can even read the first chapter of the book to just get sampling the book. And that's all there in that book, in that website, quantummarketing.com. They can also follow me on LinkedIn. My name is Raja Mannar. They can follow me on LinkedIn. I actually put out a blog almost every 2 weeks I write. It's called Quantum Marketing Sense. And now I believe we have got about 60 or 61,000 subscribers already. Obviously, so people are finding it of value, so they can follow there. Or I'm on Twitter, which is @RajaRajamannar. That's my handle. And I'm also on Instagram with the same handle, Raja Rajamannar. So this is where they can reach me. And if somebody is interested, they can also send me an email to raja.rajamannar@quantummarketing.com. And I'll absolutely respond to everyone who will write it to me. So again, I'll repeat it. Raja, which is R-A-J-A dot Rajamannar, R-A-J-A-M-A. NNAR at quantum quantum marketing marketing.com.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Raja, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thank you, Nick. Again, really enjoyed the conversation and hope your audience would have also liked it. And thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts on your platform. and hopefully we can do it again sometime soon.
Awesome. And if you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, remember you can listen free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite platform may be. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.